here, and I have to say this is a little change for me because this is a Rob Bliss talk here today. What I wanted to talk about was basically about PR boxes, which I'm coming in sort of late to the game, but I've been trying to understand this in my own way. And I'll show you where comes in a very subtle way here. So let's see. There we go. So what I wanted to talk about was basically reviewing a little bit of Bell inequalities, but getting to these no signaling Probesky-Orlik boxes, which exhibit super quantum correlations, ones that are stronger than quantum. And I want to talk about states which I'm labeling as O. I didn't have a script though, for operators that reproduce these correlations. So basically this idea, and some of you are probably more well-versed in this than I am, is that you want to start with the probability. So what I'll just call it PR. What they did was they came up with a valid probability distribution, which they showed could not be represented by a quantum state. And so it actually reaches the algebraic maximum of Bell inequality. So nature does not exhibit these, and the question is why? And I'm trying to look at it in my own way at this. And this has been the basis for a lot of work that people have done on sort of information causality and using sort of foundations of axioms of why a quantum and classical mechanics are picked out of generalized probability theories. So I'm going to review the bipartite case, which a lot of work has been done, talk about some numerical investigations, and then I have to thank Rob for that really nice introduction to tripartite entanglement, because I can go a little bit faster through this, and I'll actually mention some of the Shogi-Ghoshi's work that I used as well on the generalized GAZ states and these MS states. And then what I want to talk about is we're used to, with these entanglement measures, having something for non-locality, like a Bell inequality or the Slutnicki inequality, and rolling things up into like the concurrence or the tangle. What I actually want to look at is how the correlations are distributed among single party, two parties, and N parties. And this is a little bit like the work I did with Rob and Yvette and Tracy Tessier when we were looking at what Tracy called a complementarity relationship, where all these measures have to sort of add up to a quantity. And what I'm trying to see is like how these correlations have to move around. So rather than just having a single number, where do those correlations actually lie? So this is certainly not complete, but I think this has relevance to some of the work that Rob is doing. So let me just start off and remind you of things that you know. Someone once told me never underestimate giving the pleasure of telling people something they already know. Here is the Bell inequality, and let's talk about these correlations. I have a probability distribution, and the notation that I have here, this sort of follows a scene in a bunch of other people, where I can think of these as inputs. These are my measurement settings for my detectors. I'm going to talk about qubits. So this is the measurement axes I have here. And then these are so I can think of these as inputs. And these are my outputs, the actual values that I actually get. And these joint probability distribution is if the axes are set to A and C for two parties, and they get outcomes A and C, then this is the correlations that I measure. All right, so they take values plus and minus one, and that's why I have two minus signs when one is up and one is down. And of course, the Bell inequality is this special combination of correlations that classically is less than or equal to 2. Quantum mechanically, Stierlson showed that it has to be 2 and square root of 2. But if these values take plus or minus 1 here, then if you make all these plus 1 and this minus 1, or all these minus, then you can have this less than 2. And the absolute value is bounded by 2. So if all of these were 1 and this was minus 1, you can actually have an algebraic maximum of 4. So since quantum mechanics bounds it here, a non-locality is bounded, then why does nature take advantage of this? This picture here is just to point out that this is something that actually Schumacher showed, that you can actually think of this inequality as arising from correlation distances. I can define 1 minus this correlation as a positive quantity, which walks and talks like a metric, a distance measure. And then what I can do is I can form this triangle inequality, which classically what you would have is that this distance around this way should be longer than this distance. But when you put in quantum correlations, you can actually have this violated. So you can think of this Bell inequality as a measure of the violation of triangle inequalities or general political inequalities. So what the PR correlation came up with was, suppose I had this joint distribution between Alice and Bob, and so Alice here is going to have measurement settings X and Bob will have Y, and outcomes A and B, which again take values plus and minus one. And suppose these are equal to a half if this doctored up relationship happened, if the sum of the outputs is equal to the product of the inputs. And all these take values. So when I actually do this, 0 and 1, when I do this side here, 0 and 1 corresponds to the plus and minus values here. So what this is saying is that's why I'm showing a little bit here. My slides are always really busy, so I put these red boxes around what's important, and then you can ignore the rest. So what this is showing is how these correlations work. What this says here is that if A and B, for example, sum to 0, that's the case where you have 0, 0, or 1, 1, then if the measurement settings also take values of 0 and 1, for the cases of 0, 0, 0, 1, and 1, 1, what you'll get is a plus 1 here. And that will happen for these two cases. And then the rest will be 0. However, if you actually have this being equal to 1, being a 0, 1, or a 1, 0, then the only way that this could be a 1 is if x and y are both set to the value 1. Then this will give you a minus 1, and you'll see that what happens is this correlation is exactly plus 1 or minus 1. And that's why they doctored this up. And so then when you put this into the Bell inequality, what you'll get is 1, 1, 1, minus a minus 1, you'll get 4. Okay. So something can't be right with this, meaning that you can't have this as a physical state. And that's why I think this was done back in 1997. So what you ask is, of course, okay, you want this to be no signaling. So this is where the relativity sneaks in. All right. And always no signaling, what you're asking for no signaling here is that basically, out of these probability distributions, all you really have to require, where's my little light there? You can hardly see it here. Can you see that? I have a, can you see it? Am I? Oh, I see. Okay. All you require here is normalization. In other words, that if you sum out over the outcome for any measurement setting here, you better get equal to 1. So all that no signaling requires is that if you sum out over some of them, let's say the remaining n minus k measurement values, formally this will depend on all of the measurement settings. But if you cannot signal faster than the speed of light, then what you're requiring is that this probability distribution only depend on these outcomes. So that's what a no signaling is. It looks very insignificant here. It's not very restrictive. But it turns out that this PR correlation does not violate that. Okay? And in fact, that's what all this is showing here. First of all, it's just trivial to show that the sum of all the probabilities are equal to 1. But then what this is trying to show on this side here is that if I actually sum over B for this, formally this is depends on both measurements, but what I do locally, if I'm Alice with measurement setting X, it shouldn't depend on Bob's measurement setting Y. And if you go through this calculation here, you find out that this PR probability distribution is always, the reduced distribution for the single particle is always a half, regardless of what the measurement setting are. So these are actually called isotropic. So in other words, no signaling does not rule out these super correlations. Okay, so what is known about the structure of these no signaling? Where no signaling comes in again is also the type of measurements that you're making. So if I have n parties that are spatially separated, what I'm asking is that I make a tensor product of measurements. There's no correlations in these measurements. There's no sums of these terms. These are just these physical measurements that I make here, which I might as well take as projection operators. And then what we have here is that we have that the probability distribution is given by the trace of this measurement over this object here. So it's hard to not, rather than just calling this an operator, I'm going to call this a state and distinguish a state from a quantum state. So this state is simply an operator. What we're trying to do is find the operators that will reproduce this probability distribution. So let me just take a second here. Normally what we're used to is that this is a density matrix and this is a positive operator. And then we come along and we do some measurement in the lab, and we produce these probabilities, joint probability distributions. Here, the thinking is sort of the reverse. The thinking is that we have these numbers, and that's what PR came up with. They came up with this joint probability distribution whose marginals are valid probabilities, single particle probabilities. So all the reduced probabilities are good probability distributions. And what we're trying to do is saying that we're going to impose, this is where special relativity comes in the form of the measurements that we're going to make. And we're trying to find this thing here. And if this state here is positive, then we say that it's a density matrix represents a physical state or a quantum state. Now, this, for a fixed set of measurements, if I pick these measurements here, then I can get these probabilities by a trace rule. It's known that if you actually say that this must hold for all measurements, not just a fixed set of measurements, a finite set of fixed measurements, then these are called Gleason correlations. And it was shown in 2010 by Barnum et al., actually 2011, that for bipartite systems, you can always find a quantum state that will reproduce these probability distributions if you ask that it holds for all measurements. But this idea doesn't extend to tripartite and above cases. So this came along from a scene. What they showed is the following. In the case of bipartite systems, you can always, I should have mentioned something else here. It turns out that in the case that if you ask for this trace rule to hold for all measurements, any possible measurement, not a fixed set of them, which may be a large fixed set of them, then this object here is actually an entanglement witness. And what entanglement witness is, it's a non-positive Hermitian operator such that on separable states, so if you have a separable state, this thing is doctored up so that it's actually positive. Therefore, if you have a quantum state rho and you have this entanglement witness, then if you get a value that's an expectation that's less than zero, then you can say that rho is actually entangled. And this is how people use it for a multipartite entangled state, is they find a state that they're interested in, they construct an entanglement witness, they go in the lab and they actually then compute this, and this is measurements that they have to make. And if it's less than zero, then they can say they achieved entanglement. Here the idea is reversed now. What we're trying to do now is not think of W, or let me call it O, as an operator, but we're trying to think of it as a possible state. And we already have the measurements that satisfy no signaling. So these measurements satisfy no signaling, and we're going to use this PR, we're going to have this already given to us. And what we want to do is explore what this must look like. So in general, this operator will not have all positive eigenvalues. Okay, it will have negative eigenvalues. So what the Asine and others showed that for the bipartite case, it turns out that by this Troy-Demolkowski isomorphism, you can always write an entanglement witness in this form of the identity for, let's say, Alice and a positive operator on Bob. And basically, by doing this trace here and moving things around, you can show that this state here, this acts on the maximally entangled state, bipartite entangled state here. So you're explicitly using this. You basically put this into the trace, roll this around to this side, have this operator, instead of acting on this, act to the left. And what you get is that you started out with an entanglement witness, but you can always transfer this the probability that you were measuring in terms of a modified measurements that you were making for Alice and Bob, acting on a real bona fide quantum state. But the thing is, you use this trick here, this representation in terms of this maximally entangled state, and this does not generalize to tripartite and Bob. So in general, if the entanglement witness has this particular form, it almost mimics something like a separable state where you have these tensor product of positive operators and this probability distribution, then you'll get you'll get this form here. Okay. So what I want to do is, in general, what I want to do is look at the case. So let me back up from this. What I want to do is let's look at the bipartite case where we'll have two outputs. So A will take values of plus or minus one, or you can think of them as zero and one. But I'm going to have many measurement settings for my quantization axis of, let's say, my Stern-Gerlach device, both for Alice and for Bob. So normally what people look for is two inputs, two outputs. But I'm going to look for two outputs and many measurement settings that you can have. And I want to explore what the structure of this operator O possibly could be for these PR correlations. So it doesn't hurt to take the measurements that we're going to do here as projection measurements. And sorry, this is a little bit busy, but it turns out that these projection measurements are just density matrices on the Poincaré sphere. And the thing that Seen came up with, which I was exploring here, was that to be able to get a representation of this O for a fixed set of measurements that I have to construct these tilde matrices that satisfy this trace relationship. So that when I have one of these measurement operators that either Ellis or Bob has, I have to make sort of its dual such that when I trace over it, I get these delta functions here. So you put all this in, you do all this stuff, and you can see that the coefficients of these things are the actual probability distributions, the joint and the marginal distributions here. And for the case of two inputs and n outputs, it turns out that if you just look down at this bottom one here, I changed the notation, is that what I have is the probability, joint probability distribution for 0, 0 means spin up for Ellis and spin up for Bob. This one here is the reduced distribution for, let's just say, Ellis for spin up, and this one is for Bob for spin up. And it has this form here, where these matrices are dual to the actual measurement matrices that I have here, and I just labeled M for Ellis and N for Bob. They're both these density matrices here. So now that I have this general form for M measurements that I'm going to take, what I do is I simply stick in the PR probability distribution. And it turns out that when you stick them in, you get something very interesting that happened. This operator, in terms of the probabilities, and going back now into a representation in terms of Pauli matrices, the things that we're all used to here, we get a term here where the marginals here are always equal to half. So these single particle terms drop out. This part here in the density matrix is the maximally mixed state, the identity cross the identity. And this term is the two-particle correlation, the two-party correlation term. And what's happening here is I have n measurements, and I'm summing over all possible measurements that I have. So apologize, this is a little bit busy, but what you get for this operator here is that they're always product of sigma, one for Ellis, one for Rom. And the coefficients that actually come out in front here turn out to be what the even and odd means, is that if I have this collection of n measurements, and I've labeled them 1, 2, 3, then this is a sum over all the even measurements, and this is a sum over all the odd measurements for Ellis, and this is the same thing for Bob. So the single particle correlations are gone, and all these correlations are in the two-party correlation. There's nothing here in the maximally mixed state. Okay, so that's important here. So the thing is, you can actually then look at this and then say, okay, well, what are the measurements here that we have? These measurements that I make are just, can be given, for the case of qubits, as just a three vector on the Bloch sphere. Okay, now in general, all I really require is that this vector lie either on or inside the Bloch sphere. But let's take it to actually lie on the Bloch sphere. And I can write down these equations that I have to satisfy. Turns out that to find these tilde matrices, I have to find these sort of dual Bloch vectors. They're actually longer than the unit Bloch sphere. But they're dual in the sense that when I multiply them times the measurement vectors, I get this condition. And you might think, well, okay, look, if this is a three vector, then the most I can have is three possible measurements, three or less. And it turns out that there is a unique solution just by linear algebra, and that's actually the case. But in general, if I have more than three, because this thing is a three vector, then I can essentially have a least square solution. And so what I want to do is explore what if I have that. Formally, you can have this least square solution, but then the solution to this equation will have errors in it. So it's easier to just actually see this when you actually do the calculation. So what this thing is telling me here, that I have an operator that reproduces the PR correlations for two outputs, spin up and spin down, but I have n possible measurements that I could set my detector at, and so does Alice. And what you see here is that, so here is the probability, so here's the probability distribution for spin up for Ellis and spin up for Bob. It has this very regular form here. Everything is a half here. And if it's spin up for Bob and spin down for Alice, then it only has a half here in the middle. And if you look where it happens, if I label it 0, 1, and 2, it happens only on the odd numbers that it's non-zero. And if I label 0 and 2 as even, then I only get contributions where it's even. So more importantly, the correlations here are showing up in this form here, where anything that's even has a 1, anything that's odd, there's only one term here, has a minus 1 here. Okay, so that's what's happening in these PR boxes. Okay, great. I want to say more about this in a minute. But then what happens if I actually try to have 4 measurements? All right, if I have 4 measurements, then in general what happens is that I can have all these probabilities, this joint probability, sum up to 1, but the individual probabilities can actually be negative in places for them to sum up to 1. So you have to hunt for randomly for cases when you actually can get cases where all the probabilities, that's why I was showing this, all the probabilities are equal to 1. And you see here that now they're no longer regularly a half here. And the correlations are no longer this very regular nice pattern here that's happening. You get these correlations that are changing. And what this is trying to show is that, so what is this graph showing here? SQ is the value of 2 times the square root of 2. And so this is the CHSH parameter, which can take 4 as a maximum value. And SQ is the quantum value of 2 times the square root of 2. So if this is positive, this means that you have these super correlations. Okay? And so I get super correlations for 2 measurements for Alice and Rob, 3 Alice and Bob, and 3 for Alice and Rob. But then what happens is I still have some super correlations, but they're diminishing as I try to push more and more measurements. All right. Then what this is showing is that if I treat this as a matrix and I look for its eigenvalues, the minimum eigenvalue is always negative here. So that's why it's not a quantum state. And it becomes harder and harder as I ask for more and more measurements for this to happen. And if you look at this scale here, this is a logarithmic scale, goes up to 10 to the minus 5. And this is the first iteration out of randomly trying to find such a case where the probabilities are all positive and are valid distributions, and it sort of scales exponentially here. So it gets exponentially harder to keep doing this. Okay. So what I wanted to show you is that there are other objects that have this form here that we're used to. So what I'm trying to say is that the PR box has this form of a maximally mixed component, and then this correlation, this two-party correlation term, which is just a 3x3 matrix here, let's say for if I took three measurements between Alice and Rob here. And if I wanted to calculate the correlation, if Alice has a measurement M on the block square and Bob has N, then the correlation is given by this. And this is what the correlation matrix is. Now, the most general two-bit qubit state has single particle terms where there's an identity, let's say, for Bob and some block vector for Alice, and the reverse for Bob, Alice, and Rob. And then here's the two-party correlation. And if you look at a singlet state, then the singlet state has the same form, but it has this very special correlation, right? It's all minus 1 on the diagonal. So with this long preamble, what I'm getting at is, like, what's the difference between these two? And what sort of determines the structure of where these correlations lie? So what determines whether the correlations are in the single particle properties or in the two-party correlations? So the other Bell states have this form as well. Notice that the determinant is always minus 1. It's always on the diagonal. There's always at least 1 minus 1 here. So these are the 4 Bell states have this. So I won't go through all the tripartite discussion that Rob had, but basically there's this Slutnicki inequality. And you can generalize the PR box to a tripartite PR box. And all you do is, rather than just having the binary sum is equal to xy, you have the triple sum is equal to this combination of products here. And essentially what happens here is that, again, this quantity is, as Rob pointed out, is satisfied for biseparable states and violated for anything that has pure three-particle entanglement. And so you can, with this PR probability distribution, you've doctored it up so that the correlations are either 1 and minus 1. And when you put this into here with 8 terms here, you see that you get all 1s and minus 1s such that this thing ends up to 8. But quantum mechanically, Slutnicki showed that it's only 4 times the square root of 2. And I won't go through, how much time do I have left?
9 minutes.
Oh, okay, good. So I won't go through all the details of this, but I wanted to show that if you look at what, go through the same sort of calculation as to what the form of this operator has here, that is non-positive, it basically looks like, for a tripartite, it looks like an extension of what we had for the two-particle case. Again, what was happening here was, which may not be clear here, is that this little box, 1, 1, 1, minus 1, see, it's even, odd, whenever there's an even term here, you get a 1. And whenever it's odd, odd, you get a minus 1. And that's reflected in this state here, in this even, odd, odd, even, all that plus terms, and the minus comes in terms of the odd, odd one. And then for the tripartite case, there's extra terms here for if I have measurements between Alice, Bob, and Charlie. And I'll leave it to say that it's just a generalization of what, again, we had before. And again, what's interesting here is that this is just purely three-party correlations that are happening here. No two-party correlations and no single-party correlations. So again, it's interesting to ask what's happening. So this slide's a little bit busy, but what you can ask for is, okay, now what happens if we take this state and we start asking to put some constraints on it? All right, we know that this state can't be a quantum state, so it can't have all positive eigenvalues. So we can ask for something, we can ask for positivity. What does positivity ask for that state? And so what you can do is you can take your operator, separate out the maximally mixed state, and then whatever left is called K. So what we're doing here is basically, we're leaving this stuff, and basically K is all this stuff here. And it's all the single, two particle and single particle stuff as well. Okay, so just rewrite it, your operator in terms of this form. And then this guy here, if this operator was positive, it turns out that then this one has to be less than one. The eigenvalues have to be less than one. So by the Cayley-Hamilton theorem, this characteristic polynomial is satisfied by the matrix itself, and all the eigenvalues have to be less than one. After one, it's monotonic. And so what that means is that if I write down the characteristic polynomial as a product of all the eigenvalues, lambda minus its eigenvalue, then it has to be monotonic, and it turns out that it's monotonically increasing after one. So what it means is that it has positive derivatives for all derivatives after 1. And I value it for greater than 1. If I evaluate it just at 1, what it means is that this was actually shown, and I'm sorry the reference is not on here. In another paper you can find it, you can always write the characteristic polynomial as an expansion of this polynomial. And these coefficients have a deterministic relationship about how you can write them. And the t's here turn out to be the trace of the matrix that you're finding the characteristic polynomial. So this is well known, and this has a recursion relationship to determine these d's here. And if you simply ask that all these, the slope of all the derivatives past lambda equals 1 have to be positive, then you come up with this complicated relationship that I'm just trying to show for the case of 2 and 3 for basically, let's see, the 2 and 3 is the power of the polynomial that I'm looking at. Okay, so what you get is these conditions here. And what these conditions then I want to apply to my system. So taking all this and applying it here, what we have here is that if you ask for the trace, so I'm looking at this operator, I'm taking out the maximally mixed part and looking at everything else. And if I look at the trace of that part squared, what I get is the sum of the squares of all the single particle properties, the sum of the squares of all the two particle properties, and the sum of the square of all the n particle properties. All right? And it has to be less than or equal to n times n minus 1, and if I didn't write down here, n is 2 the little n, where n is the number of qubits. So I should have written that somewhere. So here's n. This capital N is 2 the little n. So in the case of 2 qubits, what you get is that the sum of the squares here, if you put in n is equal to 4 here, what you get is, and there's an n here, so this cancels here, and you get n minus 1. What you get is that this has to be less than or equal to 3, which is kind of nice, which simply says, hey, there are three terms here. And the correlations can equal be in the sum of the squares of the block vector for Alice, for Bob, or in the two-party correlation. And if you do this for 3 qubits, then there are three other terms here for the two-party correlations, three block vectors. And then there is this term here, which is the pure three-party correlation term. And this has to be less than or equal to 7. So that's kind of benign, but it already tells you something quite interesting. What it tells you is that if you look at this, what this says is that the positivity constraint says that the sum of the squares of all these correlations has to be less than or equal to 3. So if we look at the like a Bell state, the singlet state, notice that it saturates this. The sum of the squares of the two-party correlations is 1, 1, 1, is 3. But if you go to this PR box, it had this form here, this even-odd form here, and there are 9 terms here. So the sum of the squares of this is 9. So what this tells you is that the PR box, this is one of the punchlines of this, has more two-party correlation than is allowed physically. Okay? Now, the thing is, So the thing is, for the three-qubit state, what I'm drawing here is, here's the maximally mixed term. Here's the single particle terms. Here are the two particle terms. There are two sigmas here. So this is like between, let's say, Alice and Bob, Alice and Charlie, and Bob and Charlie, and then the three-particle term. So if you look at this and you apply the positivity constraint to this, what you get is it has to be less than 7. All right? So there are 7 terms here. So you look at this tripartite state, and you have this, and the problem is there are 3 things, choose 2, of two-party correlations here. So how do you decide what possible state you could be here? So to try to generalize the previous state that looked like this, you might think with this even-odd symmetry here, you might try taking this state where this is the anti-symmetric symbol, which is 1 for even permutations, 1, 2, 3, and odd for this. And if you do this, there are only 6 terms, the even permutations and the odd permutations. This satisfies the positivity constraint, but it turns out that this thing here, if I stick this into here, into my state here, this is not a quantum state. It has a negative eigenvalue. So positivity is not enough. And it turns out that if you then say, okay, well, look, I want to look at, and I didn't know this a pi tangle. So I'm glad Rob pointed that out. Because what I decided to do was look at pure states. And if you look at pure states, you can say that, okay, well, the state I'm looking at is pure. And let me consider a pure state and ask what kind of restrictions on the correlations do I get by asking for it to be pure. Englert and Matt-Wally actually looked at this for the bipartite case. You get these other inequalities that happen here. And all I want to point out is I'll sort of jump to the punchline, is that you can find out that for tripartite cases, if you have any odd number of qubits, turns out that the trace of the cube of this matrix K, because it's a traceless matrix, the trace of K cubed has to be equal to 0. So it turns out that you cannot have pure states of odd number of particles here. So it turns out that this tripartite state cannot be pure. Okay, it has to be a mixed state, which is different. So Rob was already pointing out that there's differences that you can have here between the tripartite and the bipartite case. It turns out that this thing that looks like the generalization of the bipartite case, same form, just maximal number of multiparticle correlations and the maximally mixed state. This thing cannot be pure in the tripartite case, but can be pure in the bipartite case. Let me just sort of jump to the end here. I think what I'll do is just sort of jump here. What I did do is I did look at, like Bob did for the, Rob did for the, I looked at, I keep calling Bob. You can look at these generalized GHZ states, and you can look at these maximally sliced states. And essentially what I was trying to do, and I won't go through all the detail, is not just look, you can calculate, and Rob wrote this down, the formulas for what the tangles are. So here are formulas for the tangles. And you can roll up these numbers here. But I don't have time to go through this. I can talk to people that are interested. But I was trying to see where the correlations then must lie. The S1, S2, and S3 are correlations that are in the single particle properties, whereas these are in bipartite divisions, and these are in tripartite. And you see differences between the GHCs and these maximally sliced states. And this is, I think, pointing to the robustness that Rob was talking about before. These states are different. So even though I looked at this, I'll just wrap up here. This is my last slide here. Is that the point of this whole talk is that rather than just looking at, I mean, you don't have to just look at supercorrelations. what I'm trying to do is say you can look at the state. So a density matrix is going to have this form too. It's simply going to be positive. So you can look at other questions. For a two-qubit case, what I didn't look at yet, which other people have, is you can also look about the separability of the state and see what the constraints say about where, how the correlations, how they're distributed between single party, two parties, three parties, and more. So rather than just having a single number such as concurrence or something like tangle, trying to see where the correlations might lie and how these constraints then dictate where these correlations can be and why these PR states are basically unreasonable because they ask for more correlations than are allowed physically. So I'll end there.